All right. Well, I am so, so excited about our next session as we start off our general retreat, the main session yesterday morning. And I shared with you about the power of the mind and the fact that you are what you are and where you are because of what has gone into your mind. And you can change what you are and where you are by changing what goes in your mind. We literally have a world-renowned neuroscientist with us today, a phenomenal person, one of my favorite people in the whole world, Dr. Caroline Leaf. We're going to hear from her husband, Mac, first, and then he'll turn it over to Dr. Leaf. All right?
I was just going to quickly introduce myself because I'll be selling books and stuff over at the back there. Caroline's written 18 books, but I just bought the books around this topic today. So if you're wanting others, you can get from our website. I've been married to Caroline for 33 years. I'm the subject of most of the books, but not this specific one. So enjoy yourself with this session, and thank you very much for the honor of being able to address you today. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and a special thank you to Howard, who is a very good friend of Mac and mine, and we just really great, just love being with you, and we had a wonderful walk on the beach last night, talk in preparation for today, so that was, I mean, what more do you need? If you walk on the beach, you are in your perfect you, quite literally. Okay, so as a neuroscientist, I have been researching the mind-brain connection, or psychoneurobiology, for the last 38 years. I began in the world of therapy, so I had a very intensive clinical neuroscience practice where I work with people with traumatic brain injuries and severe learning disabilities and traumas and autism, all those things that we knew so little about and we have known so little about, but that we're learning so much more about. And that's the beauty of being a scientist, is that the story is never fully written. You are constantly organically growing and developing. And that I say that to say that that's what identity is also like. Identity is not fully written. It is the foundations are laid, but we have to constantly develop our identity. And people consistently, it's a human thing, we go through identity crises. So when I talk about the perfect you, it is based on my history of working as a scientist. I still do clinical trials. I've been researching for many years. And as a clinical therapist, also as a mom of four kids, and as a friend of many friends, etc. So in other words, life experiences has made me realize that if we don't understand identity and this perfect you nature that we have, we're going to be shaped by the world and by things around us. And when we lose our identity, we lose hope, as we know. And one of the main issues when someone has suicidal ideation or tries to commit suicide, I've worked with a lot of suicide victims, families of suicide victims, and people that have didn't manage to go through a suicide, and they tried and they survived. And I can tell you the underlying issue is people don't feel that they feel hopeless. They don't feel that their identity is enough for the world and for everyone else. And your identity is who you are, and if you don't think you're enough, you're going to give up. And that's why I really hammer this concept of the perfect you and identity in a huge way. And the reason people always say, why do I call this the perfect you? Because one of the most common things people say is, I'm not perfect, you know. I mean, how many times have you said that? And how many times have I said that? But actually, you are perfect at your core. Who you are, we see from psychoneurobiology. Psycho meaning mind. Neuro meaning brain, biology meaning body. We see from the psychoneurobiological research over the last 150 years, but specifically in the last sort of 45, 50 years, we have seen that we are quite literally at our core wired for love and wired for optimism. So you and I sitting here today have the most phenomenal brain and body biology and incredible mind. Mind is different from brain, and I'll come into that point in a moment. But your mind, brain, body is wired for love. A Nobel Prize winning scientist actually said that in the research that he was doing. And what that means is that we do not have any structures in the brain or the body, right down to the level of our cells and the subatomic level, for not being in perfection. And I'm going to define perfection as we're going along as well. In other words, you are wired for love. Love is survival. Love is this ability to recognize that I'm a human in life and that I, at my core, have this incredible contribution to make to the world. There's something you can do that no one else can do, and that is in your psychoneurobiology. It is in your mind, your optimism bias. And what that also means is that we're not drawn to the negative because we are inherently broken or evil or toxic or have damaged parts of our brain or have parts of our brain that are evil, which we read about in the media. What it means is that we are made of love, in love, and we are drawn to restore any kind of imbalance that threatens that love, which is survival. So we're drawn to toxic situations like the news that is so toxic or talking about situations with between people that are whatever. We're drawn to those not because we have this inherent design that is evil or whatever or toxic or broken. It's because we're trying to restore the balance. So anything that is out of our sort of perfect new wired for love nature and our experience of life is going to create a dysregulated state in our psychoneurobiology, which threatens our survival, and immediately we are drawn back to try and fix that. So our identity is actually our wise mind. So at the core of who you are is this incredible, brilliant, beautifully wired, with incredible mind-brain-body connections set up in this incredible way for you to do life. But in doing life, it's a messy, messy process. So part of your perfect you is actually accommodating for the messiness of life. So what I mean by that is that we maybe get irritated. So we get into a sort of toxic state. That's not because your brain is bad and made you do it. Okay? It is because something happened. Life happened. You had an argument with someone or something happened that frustrated you. So you reacted. And that reaction may have been messy, like you got irritated or frustrated. And that didn't make you feel very nice because we have an immediate physiological response to whatever we're doing. So then that our brain becomes dysregulated and our body becomes dysregulated. That then sends signals that, hey, something's out of sync here and we want to try and restore that balance. So that's messy. Messiness is okay if we tune into the signals that it produces, the frustration, the irritation, the sore stomach, the feeling of something's not right. We tune into that and then we repair the mess and then we grow. And that is what I'm talking about, the perfect you, what it basically means. It is the acknowledgement that my psychoneurobiology is wired to work for me and not against me. It's wired for love, which is survival. Part of that love design is the accommodation for messiness. And that's where the I'm not perfect, you know, could kind of fit in. But now I want you to change it. I'm not always clean, tidied up. I'm messy, you know. It's okay to be messy. Maybe change your wording to something like that. Because it is in the messiness that we repair and grow. But if we ignore the messiness and we suppress it and we pretend it's not there, we get even more messy in our mind. And our perfect you identity starts getting challenged. So we need to constantly do identity checks, because when our identity becomes challenged, we start operating in a different way. Because your identity drives your functionality. And your identity is basically you, how you uniquely think and feel and choose. So let me step back for a few moments and just let's talk quickly about what is the mind, what is the brain, what is the body. And then I'm going to unpack what I've just said as the introduction with lots of slides and examples to help you understand this. Because this is so important. So important that when I ran my practice still, the first thing I would do would be working on someone's identity. That would be the first thing in the session. And then every part of every session was a bit of an identity check. Then I would move on to brain building. I'm going to tell you about all these things. And then I would move on to working on areas that needed attention, whatever toxic areas or something that we needed to work on. And that principle I have researched and I have shown that when you work like that, when you train someone to go from your identity to and building resilience to then fixing up the problem, that is a process of cleaning up your mental mess. And when you do that, you're actually activating your perfect you. You're activating your natural wired for love specialization that is in you. And what that means in plain simple language is you're using your wise mind to manage your messy mind. And we all designed to do that. We all able to do that, but we don't know it. Because we don't get taught that. Because we get taught that in our current language, we're taught that your brain made you do it. And that your brain's broken. And that you're a result of genetics. And that this is a behavior pattern that's part of you and you can't change it. But you can change anything. Neuroplasticity means your brain can be changed. And I say the words, neuroplasticity is the understanding that your brain can be changed. Can be changed. The brain can't change itself. The difference between you and I and a dead person is that the brain's not doing anything. But if I linked you up to various different types of brain technology now, we would see massive changes happening in your brain because you're alive, because your identity is operating, because your perfect you identity is driving how you're listening to me and how you're processing this stuff. And you're taking all these words and things in and you are thinking, feeling and choosing, which is your identity, with making sense of this stuff, and it's pushing, being pushed into your brain as an energy flow, and your brain is responding, and you are literally wiring my words into your brain as a tree, because thoughts look like trees. We call in neuroscience, we talk about thoughts having an arbor-like structure, a tree-like structure. This is why I've got this little tree on the stage over here, and this doesn't kind of, we're trying to find something that represented a tree. I have a great tree that I normally carry around with me, and I don't know how with all our travels, but somehow it's not in my travel case, so we had to improvise in the hotel. But essentially, your thoughts look like trees, and thoughts are the product of your mind, and your mind is linked into your identity. So mind is how you uniquely think, feel and choose, how you think, feel and choose. Identity is how you uniquely do that. And when you are doing that think, feel, choose stuff, you are taking all the experiences of life and you are converting them into physical products in your brain. And as soon as they're in your brain, because your brain is responding on this electrochemical and genetic and neurochemical level, an electromagnetic level, as soon as they're in your brain sends a message to your entire body, to every other cell of your brain and body, and you have about 37 to 100 trillion cells in your brain and your body. And so as soon as it's in your brain, as a thought tree made of proteins and vibrating and all these chemicals, it then sends a message to every cell and the brain, and then every cell of your body, the DNA changes. So this experience that you're having now is being converted by your unique identity from my words to your mind, to your brain, to your genes, and to how you, in other words, to your entire psychoneurobiology. This lecture now is being converted at 400 billion actions per second and faster by you with your unique identity into your brain as a product, as an actual physical tree made of proteins, and also it changes in your DNA, and also little waves of energy in your mind, because your mind is actually an energy force that is keeping your brain driving. It's the power that drives your brain and your body. And I know this is kind of a lot to process, but if you can read the news and understand what's going on with politics, which is impossible anyway, this is way easier to understand. Okay? So don't get put off by the words neuroscience. Really listen deeply. Tune in deeply, because what I'm giving you is you are brilliant. You are able to process this. Just get beyond the neuroscience, brain, whatever, and think, well, I don't understand that. It's not that difficult. If you think of it, you are brilliant. And what I'm telling you is that you have all this beautiful brain and body that is wired to support you. You have 200 plus specializations in your brain that are unique to you, in the way that they're organized. And no one in this room has your 200 specializations. And those 200 areas work together to create the uniqueness that only you can produce, because you think, feel, and choose about what you are experiencing in your own unique way. So I'm telling you all the same stuff, but you're all interpreting this differently, because your unique identity is different to the person sitting next to you. And it's not better or worse. It's brilliant. So there's no competition. You can never compete with each other, because no one can ever compete with you. This is such a powerful philosophy, because it goes completely the opposite to what the world teaches us, which is that we've got to compete to survive. Competition creates brain damage. Okay? And I'm not talking about sort of the healthy competition where you're training yourself to get to a higher level, maybe in the gym or something like that, or when teams are playing. That's we've got to watch the mindset behind there, because sports can really damage mental health when it's not managed properly. Anything, if you don't manage these things properly. So there's good and bad competition, but essentially you are not designed for competing, for wiping out someone else or competing, trying to trying to be better than someone else. That is unhealthy. That actually causes brain damage. That actually impacts your identity in a negative way and will make you feel worse about yourself and will decrease your intelligence, which is unfortunate because you're brilliant, and part of the identity teaching is that your brilliance grows. So intelligence, which I've done a lot of intelligence research, intelligence is not some fixed static thing. Intelligence is something that constantly grows as you are developing your identity. So when you talk about identity, identity has this incredible potential to increase your intelligence because it's tied into wisdom. Wisdom, identity, these things are all tied into each other. So when you try and compete with someone else, you go against the natural principle, which is to enhance. So if you're not any competition for me, and I find out what you do, and I try and support you in whatever way I can, then I'm enhancing you. I'm using my identity in a really good way to tune into you, to be able for you to work at, to function at a higher level. And that in itself creates an increase in intelligence and a boost to my own identity because I've enhanced you, and that is a very, very healthy, creates a very, very healthy pattern in the brain and the body. But that is contrary to what the world is teaching. It's all about don't tell them too much about what you're doing because they're going to steal your stuff, or if that one's got this, then I must take from them and I must get it for me because otherwise they're going to be better than me. That's very brain damaging. That is damaging to your identity. That goes against the perfect you nature of who you are. You are phenomenal. There is something you can do that no one else can do. I did a lot of work back in South Africa over 25 years working in the apartheid, apartheid transition and the post-apartheid era alongside running my practice. And I can tell you that one day I was training a group of teachers in the Eastern Cape, which is a part of South Africa. And what I would do always in any teacher training is I'd first teach this whole identity concept so that they could really help their students to understand who they are. And then from there I would go into teaching how to learn and how to manage emotions and all that stuff. And I remember going on about the stuff I'm teaching you now, and one of the teachers stood up and said, "Dr. Leaf, there is someone in my class who is definitely not part of what you're teaching. He is so stupid that there's no ways that he can do all these brilliant things you're saying." And for once, and I don't easily not have words. I have a lot of words. I can talk a lot. And I have opinions on a lot of stuff, but I have a lot of, and I'll say it. And I'll speak it. I mean, you ask me questions, I'll answer. So for once, however, I was totally gobsmacked. I didn't know what to say. I was so astounded that one of his colleagues actually stood up literally and spoke on my behalf. And I was so grateful that this person stood up because I was trying to formulate, how do you answer someone like this? Because it was a lot more aggressive than what I even said. And this colleague stood up and said, "Do you know, sir, that that student in your class that you're calling stupid can do something that you can't do? And your responsibility to activate that in them." And that changed my life. This was nearly 30 years ago. It was only 8 years into my work. And I realized then I have to research identity. I have to be able to help people understand what it is. And I went down a track where I thought identity was all these things, which I realized it wasn't. I realized identity was something very simple. It is so simple. It is simply how you uniquely think and feel and choose. It is this driving force that keeps you alive. It is this driving force that changes the nature of your neurophysiology. It changes your brain. That's the neuroplasticity. And you can direct this. You can develop your identity and direct your neuroplasticity. This is who you are. You have this incredible capacity to grow and develop and change. And as one of my favorite quantum physicists, Christopher Fuchs, says, it's not about you, it's about you in the world. Because there's something you can do that no one else can do. So we are a huge, big puzzle, with every single person being a piece of the puzzle. So if you're not learning how to operate in your identity, your think, feel, choose, your unique think, feel, choosing that enables you to see the world in your unique way and do something that I can't do, it kind of is messing up my life. If you think about it, so you must get your identity so you don't mess up my life. Seriously, people that are in their identity operate in love because identity activates your love nature, which is your survival nature. So instead of fighting with people to be better than them because they're different to you or for whatever reason, you actually look for the common ground and you look for the enhancement factor. Can you imagine political system that ran on that. Can you imagine a world that ran on that? Where we're not trying to shoot someone down, we're actually trying to build someone up. But you see that the most wise, if you think of the wisest person that you can think of, or book that you've read, or story that you've heard, or movie that you've seen, or whatever, think of that, or someone that you just know in your environment. They are not threatened by others. They are operating in love. You come away from being in that environment with them or talking to them, feeling, hey, I'm amazing. This is incredible. I can do this. And maybe half that conversation was stuff that you actually were disagreeing on. But there was a sense of, hey, you're amazing. You're okay. I respect that you think and feel and choose in this way. I validate you. I validate and value who you are. And that is the core message that all humans want. And if they don't get it, they want to die. They lose hope. And I'm not just saying it's an instant, if you don't value me, I'm going to die. It's an accumulation. So when you talk to someone who's tried to commit suicide, you see identity shattered. You see that they've had years and years and years of things that have happened, traumas. And a trauma is not just like one major thing, like an abuse or something. Trauma is anything toxic, from the big stuff to the small stuff. So you're just an argument with, an unresolved argument with a loved one is a level of trauma. But I'm talking about people that have, generally, if you look at the pattern of people that are have attempted suicide, or people that are land up in prisons, or people that are in extreme states of depression and anxiety, which are not brain diseases, they are responses to adverse circumstances, you'll see a pattern of where there's been a consistent attack on their identity through the adverse experiences of life. So here you are, a beautiful human, incredible, brilliant, able to do something that no one else can do, wired, literally wired for love, and you put in an environment where you're abused, where you're ridiculed, where you're told you can't do this to whatever degree, whatever extreme. And maybe it's not as a child, maybe it's in a marriage, maybe it's in the workplace, but, and listen, our identity is going to be attacked almost daily. That's why we have to be so solid in that foundation and recognize it and do identity checks. And I'm going to tell you how to do all of that. But if you've had years of that, that has wired into your brain, not as a healthy thought, but as a toxic thought. Now, we were trying to find some sort of toxic representation. If you watch me on YouTube, or you go to my podcast, Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess, you'll see the YouTuber, and you follow me on YouTube, you'll see I hold up my, I've got a really nice toxic tree that I normally use. But anyway, this gives you an idea. So this is not healthy. This is toxic. So what we see when someone experiences an adverse experience, has an adverse situation happen to them, the experience is still converted by the mind, how you uniquely think, feel, and choose, into the brain as these thought trees. But instead of the proteins folding in a healthy way, and instead of the neurochemical balance being healthy, it becomes very toxic and distorted. And so you get this distorted thing in your brain, and it's real. It's made of proteins, and it's all imbalanced. So immediately the immune system of the brain and body recognize a threat to love, threat to survival, threat to our wired for love nature. In exactly the same way as your immune system of your brain and your body is trained and is able to recognize a virus or a bacteria, like a virus like COVID or a bacteria or damage or whatever, your brain and immune system treats a toxic issue in the same way. I mean, this is so profound, guys. This is so profound. A toxic thought is real physically as something like the COVID virus. Okay? So if it's in your brain, your brain's not designed for that. So your whole mind, brain, body, your whole identity is designed to find the threat to who you are and to get rid of that. I'll show you some slides of some of my recent, a couple of case studies in my recent clinical trials as we're going through to show you what this actually can look like and how it impacts behavior. So now let's have a look and kind of start tying this up, because it's a lot that I'm throwing at you. Let's have a look at some words, because when you see words on slides, it sometimes helps, and images as well. So there's something you can do that no one else can do. This is fundamental to identity. Okay? So first of all, start off with the fact that you are this incredible person, wired for love, but you're in life. And in life, part of your perfect you identity is the ability to make the mess, which is totally okay, and then to manage the mess. What we tend to do is we make the mess, but we don't manage it. And then things get out of hand, and then we start getting to states that we can't control ourselves, or life just becomes extremely difficult. And then we get a label in the current sort of biomedical model of dealing with mental health, and then we get a label and we get medication that numbs the brain, and then you still haven't dealt with the stuff. And that doesn't lead to healing, that leads to more problems, because these thoughts are real. as real as that COVID virus is, as I keep saying, they're volcanic in nature. They will explode. You can suppress. I've had patients that have suppressed stuff for years, and you think you can get away with it. You can't, because that is creating a threat in your body, where your body it aggregates over time, and over time the vulnerability of your cells is increasing. So we make about 1 million cells every second, 1 million cells and more, and the quality of those cells, I mean, those cells then make up the organs of our body, including the brain. And essentially, over time, this is a whole sort of time process, but the quality of those cells become damaged if we don't manage our mind, if we don't get in our identity and get the wise mind talking to the messy mind. And if you don't know how, you've got to start with knowing what that even looks like. That's why we start with what is the perfect you. But if you don't do that, over time, if for years and years and 20 years or whatever you suppress something, you've created a vulnerability in the cells of your body. I had a telomere research in my most recent clinical trials, and I did some really radical stuff that people said you can't really do that, and we did it anyway. And what we found was that people that are not managing their minds, that have years and years of suppressed identity and suppressed mind management and not functioning in who they are and functioning in this false identity, their telomeres shorten. What's a telomere? Think of a chromosome. Chromosomes look like little X's. And think of where your fingernails are. That's a telomere. And a telomere is a proxy for our mental health. It's literally a proxy for how we're managing our mind. When you're dead, those telomeres are doing nothing. But when you're alive, they are helping you make new cells among a myriad of other things, but one of their main jobs is to help you make new cells. And if your mind's a mess, and your identity is compromised, because when our identity is compromised, we will naturally stay a mess. When we're confident in our identity, we then say, okay, I've made a mess, let me fix it. So this is being in the perfect you. Oops, I made a mess, my life's a mess, there's a pattern of depression, that's okay. That's not who I am. That's who I've become because of. Let me repair and let me grow. That's the perfect you. That's identity. That brings health into the brain. But being out of your identity, that pattern will then create healthy telomeres. Whereas if I stay, oh gosh, I can't do this. I'm overwhelmed. Life is terrible. I can't do this. And you just feel I'm hopeless. And you get the message, oh well, you just got a brain disease. There's something wrong with you. You're a broken individual. I mean, you already maybe were traumatized and raped, and now you get told, oh, you've also got a brain disease. It's not even science. It's a terrible, terrible way to treat people. And people, then you think, oh, well, where's the hope? So you stay in a mess thinking you can't get out of it, that this is who you are, that it's so bad. Meanwhile, it's not who you are, it's who you have become because of. So if you just stay there, your telomeres get shorter and your body's cells don't get healthy and your organs aren't healthy, and over time you increase your vulnerability to disease. And this is the psychoneurobiological link, or the mind-body-brain connection. Very, very well established. I've done a lot of research in this area too, but it's a very, very, very well established field that how you manage your stress is going to impact your body. And this is pretty common knowledge amongst everyone now, that we know that if you are very, very anxious about something that you haven't dealt with. Anxiety is not the disease. Anxiety is the signal. But if you're not dealing with it, you're going to start getting symptoms in your body. We know your cortisol will rise. We know that when your cortisol is very high, that your DHEA, which is the mother hormone, which needs to be high, will drop. And if that cortisol-DHEA balance is upset, that's going to affect your cellular division. It's going to affect your cell health. It's going to affect your endocrine system. I mean, the downstream is huge, because nothing works in isolation. We also know if you're very anxious and not managing your mind and stepping out of your identity, we know that your homocysteine levels will increase. And homocysteine is a very good indication of inflammation in the brain and the body. These are two very well-established biomarkers that we see when they aren't at the right levels. There's something going on. And so there's a lot of research in this area, and if you can put it all together, you can see patterns in people's lives. And when you're informed, the hope is that when you get back in your identity says, okay, there's a mess. How am I going to manage it? What therapy do I need? What counseling do I need? What coaching do I need? But even more than that, let me redefine my identity. Let me get back to the core of who I am, because that's what I'm going to use to heal. That's what I'm going to use to move forward in my life. That's what I'm going to use to run my business more efficiently. That's what I'm going to use to parent more efficiently and so on, or lead more efficiently, all the multiple roles that you play. And in the midst of that, every day you're going to still make more messes. You're going to slip out of your identity, get stuck in the mess. But then you remember, oh, okay, I can do this. So in other words, I show that over time, once you train yourself to understand your identity and understand then how to use mind management to develop and grow your identity, you then shift into a completely different way of functioning where you fall, but you're 81% more efficient at picking yourself up quicker. What does that look like? That means that, I'll give you an example for me, from my own life. If I woke up in the morning, I used to wake up for years in the morning complaining, negative, totally damaging my brain, even though I knew this stuff, and it would affect my whole day. And then if something bad happened during the day, like a bad email or an argument or something, it would throw me for hours. Through this understanding of what I've developed and using it and applying it, I can now recognize, oops, within seconds, I catch that tendency to complain when I wake up, and I catch it and I stop it. If someone upsets me during the course of the day, instead of letting it affect the entire day, within seconds I catch it and I manage it. There I'm using my identity, which is my wise mind, to catch and repair the mess. And that is super healthy. You see, I've given myself permission to be messy, which you need to as well. It's okay to be a mess. Part of your perfect you is a mess that you repair and grow from. So you don't have to have a goal in your mind of, I'm never going to get irritated, I'm never going to get depressed, I'm going to be this. That's not reality. It is not reality. You can't control the events and circumstances of life. You cannot control what people say. You cannot control your kids and your husband and your wife as much as you'd like to. Okay? You cannot control anything about people, life, and circumstances. But what you can control is your response. In other words, your mind. You control your mind because you are your mind, and how you manage your mind is going to determine the outcome. So you cannot change what's happened to you, but you can change what has happened in you. So if someone has a terrible childhood trauma and was raped and abused, that's not going to ever go away. And that can wreck your life. Victims of sexual trauma, and I've done a lot of work in this area, it permeates everything and it goes on for years and years and years and years and years. But what's so important and vital in helping someone who's gone through extreme trauma, and I'm just using this as an example, is the recognition that I can't change that, but I can change what it does in me. I can change how it's wired in my brain. I can take that toxic experience and I can rewire it and reconceptualize it into something that works for me and not against me. Doesn't mean I'm not going to cry and be sad. I am. But I can change it. How? Using my identity. My identity is tapping into the wisdom that is the core of who I am. This is so important. I actually did a live the other day on this because I was asked a question in an interview the other day. Oh, wisdom is only part of like the age. You know, as you get older, you get wise. And wouldn't it be great if we had wisdom as young children and our brain is not developing? Isn't that right, Dr. Leaf? And I said, absolutely not. All of that's wrong. A child of two has got wisdom. There's studies that have been done showing that even children as young as two are able to make good decisions on their basic level. And that wisdom is something that develops, and we're supposed to be developing it organically, growing it as we're going along. So wisdom and identity are put together. So let me explain this in another simple way. If you teach a child in kindergarten mathematics, it's very different to if you're teaching them in 12th grade. Do you agree? But it's still the concept of math. Now bear with me, okay? You're teaching these children math. It's different at a kindergarten level to what it is at 12th grade, obviously. That's the same thing with wisdom. Wisdom is different with a 2-year-old as it is versus an 18 or a 24-year-old. And yes, your brain takes 24 years more or less for the insulation to happen and for your frontal lobe to develop. All the physical stuff that your mind has to work through is growing, but so are you. So there's a level of wisdom that grows. What's my point? We should be shaping that and guiding that all the time. And wisdom is very tied up, as I keep on saying, in identity. So when someone feels valued and honored and validated and feels that what they have to contribute is important, and that can be developed in so many ways. It's like a child coming home from school and telling you, I'm so sad because this happened and that, and it's a ridiculous thing that's upset them according to you, but for them it's massive. So what would be validating to them is to say, oh, I'm so sorry for you. I feel so bad for you. I can see how you're so upset. Not, oh, it's not so bad, you'll get over it. That's invalidating someone's perfect you identity. And at that young age, maybe that's a 5-6 year old, that's a shot, oh, there's something wrong with me. And that starts there, and that starts taking wisdom away. When people think there's something wrong with me, you start removing people's wisdom, and you start, which is basically attacking their identity. Okay, so let's have a look at a few more slides, as I keep saying. Okay, so what is your perfect you? It's how you uniquely and specifically think, how you uniquely and specifically feel, and how you uniquely and specifically think, feel, and choose. Okay, so mind is, if you want a basic definition, is how you think, feel, and choose. Your identity is how you do that uniquely. Okay? And so, in other words, everyone listening to me at this moment, all of you listening here, I am giving you words and you're seeing images. I'm generating electromagnetic fields and sound waves, and your gravitational fields around you and your electromagnetic field around you, which is unique to you, which is part of your mind, your unique mind, is grabbing my stuff on a psychological level. You are thinking, feeling, and choosing about the stuff. And think and feel and choose always go together. You can't think without feeling. You can't feel without thinking. You can't choose without thinking and feeling, and vice versa. So mind is think, feel, choose. You, perfect you is how you uniquely do it. So you're using this perfect you identity to process on a physics level and on a psychological level this stuff I'm saying into your brain, which is what I said earlier on, and you're building a thought. So you're causing a structural change. You're actually creating. You're driving the neuroplasticity by how you are listening to me. And your how you listen to me is your identity. So you're all hearing the same thing, and that's going into the root system. This little plant has a root system. So every thought has a source. A thought is a tree. Notice that this tree is made of branches. Or think of another, think of just a tree. It's made of branches and roots. There's a lot of roots and branches in this tree. And think of a tree outside. What's my point? A thought is like a tree. So a thought is the tree, but it's made up of lots of branches. And those branches are memories. So thoughts are made of memories. They're not the same thing. A thought, the memory is not the same as a thought. A thought is made of memories, like a tree is made of roots and branches. So we get root memories and you get branch memories. The root memories are the source. So what I'm saying now is initially building, to give you a visual analogy, it's a little more complicated than this in the neurophysiology, but essentially what I am saying to you now is going in the root system. So you're getting lots of data, and I've already given you about 200 pieces of data, so you've grown about 200 little branches. Just to simplify this, in your root system. It's the same. If I looked at all your root systems of what I've said, it's the same. But what's different? Where does identity come in? How you interpret that? So as the stuff is coming in, the experience is coming in, you are growing those branches simultaneously. And the branches above ground are your interpretation. So here's your identity. This part over here that we see is going to produce... So your identity is the interpretation of the source. If you are the child that's abused, that abuse is toxic. So there's a toxic root system. The interpretation is I'm bad, I'm not valued, I'm not worthy, whatever the language and age, etc. In other words, the interpretation is not in alignment with their perfect you. You get that? But if that child, you bring up a child and you say, oh my gosh, you're amazing, I love that picture that you drew and you're so special to me, and as you bring up, we should be doing with our children, what are you doing? They're getting an experience from you, and the interpretation is I'm valued. Are you getting what I'm saying? So each and every one of you, your branches above ground, using an analogy, are different because of your perfect you. Okay, so your interpretation. So every single one of you here is interpreting this totally differently to every single person, and that every one of you is unique. So that's great. So if you share this afterwards and you apply this, you'll all have your own unique angle, and it's based on your experience. As I'm telling you this stuff, you're not just focusing on this. All kinds of other thoughts are popping into your mind as I'm speaking. Am I right? So those thoughts have got memories attached to them, and where are they coming from? An area of your mind called the non-conscious, N-O-N. So your beautiful identity has got elements, it has sort of got these divisions. Your mind has these divisions. You have your non-conscious mind, and you have your conscious mind. And you have your subconscious mind, and you have the unconscious mind. So what are the differences? Just very quickly. Your conscious mind is the easiest to understand. When you're awake, you're conscious. So your conscious mind is when you're awake. Your subconscious is those thoughts that are just popping up, into your conscious mind, those thoughts that are popping up, that's the subconscious, things that are moving from the non-conscious. The non-conscious is the biggest part of you, and it operates 24/7, and it is always working. Whereas the conscious mind is only working when you're awake, the non-conscious mind is infinite. It's the driver. It's where every single experience that you've ever had from a certain point in the womb to the age that you're at today is stored. Okay, so think of your non-conscious mind as being a massive forest, and this massive forest has got a strip through the middle, and that strip through the middle is this beautiful, green, exquisite forest. It's beyond beautiful, and nothing can damage it. That's your perfect you. That's the core of who you are. That's your wisdom. How do you tap into that? You're doing it now, just by having this kind of conversation, just by listening to something that is giving you information. You're drawing on your wisdom, you're drawing on your wise mind to make sense of this. Around the middle of the forest, there's all these other green trees, some little ones, that's newly formed thoughts, new experiences, maybe from yesterday or the day before, or this morning. And then there's medium sized and big ones and really big ones. And in amongst these different shades of green and all that kind of thing, the trees, sizes, there's some clusters of toxic trees. And the toxic trees hopefully are not as in the minority. But in some people that have just experienced toxicity from the time that they were born, they're going to have a lot more toxicity in their brain. And whatever you think about the most will grow. So if that's all you're experiencing, if that's your chronic state of experience, like, for example, racism, it's a chronic state. If you're constantly living in fear that you're going to be attacked at whatever situation, you chronically, that is a chronic state. If you're living in an abusive household, that's a chronic state. So that's all the other good stuff, and your identity is not really, it's like overshadowed. So think of the green forest and the beautiful green forest, the perfect you, that identity at the core for you on. Think of all the green trees around that, and then think of those clusters. Now, in a very toxic, chronic environment, those clusters are big. There's lots of them, and maybe they, like, a lot of them are surrounding that wisdom, so you can't see the wood for the trees. This is hiding your ability to actually tap into your wisdom. So you're operating in a coping mechanism when you get these trauma responses, which are coping mechanisms. And so you are in flight, freeing, freeze, fawning. There's all these different types of responses that are names for how we try and cope. And that's those affecting our identity. And so that whole picture together is affects our functioning, but that can be changed because your brain is neuroplastic. Back in the 80s when I trained, we were told the brain couldn't change. The mind and brain were separate because your brain, as I've been explaining, your mind drives your brain. Your brain is physical. Your mind and brain are not the same thing. But back in the 80s, where we understood mind-brain being separate, they didn't think the brain could change. And I did some of the first neuroplasticity research in the early 90s, showing that if you have traumatic brain injuries, you can change your mind. Then I showed it, you can, with changing your mind, you can actually heal the brain and change the brain. By the mid-90s, this was accepted. And now we all talk about neuroplasticity, which is the ability of the mind to change the brain. The brain can't change itself. I said it already. If you're dead, and I have a dead brain, dead person here, and take their brain out their head, then it's not going to do anything. But your brains, now you're alive. Why? Your mind is your aliveness. Your identity is the unique way that you're alive. And it's driving this response in your brain. So everything you're thinking now is changing your brain. You're not the same now as you were 5 minutes ago, an hour ago, 2 hours ago, 48, 24 hours ago. You are constantly having new experiences which your mind, your unique identity, is processing into your brain. And if your identity is challenged, your processing becomes distorted. You build distortions into your brain that dysregulates your brain and your body, your neurophysiology, and now you are going to have symptoms of body stuff, mind stuff, anxiety, depression, frustration, etc., etc. And those aren't illnesses, those are signals telling you, hey, wake up, tune into the signals. If you're not operating your identity, you won't read the signals. You won't know what they are. You'll think that they're something, that's not, you don't know what they are. In the Perfect You book, I talk about them as being the discomfort zones. As I've developed my research and so on, I call them, they're basically warning signals, okay, like an alarm. So depression, anxiety, frustration, irritation, panic attacks, all of these things are signals that if we're in our identity, we welcome them as helpful messengers, not as some scary bad thing that you've got to suppress, But as they're hard to deal with. But you now listen to what I'm saying. This sounds so contrary to what should be being said. But they're not bad. They're actually telling you something. They're messengers that are telling you you're out of your identity. Something's wrong. This is not who you are. You are like this because of something. So if you are showing up with patterns of excessive crying in your life, or more problems in your marriage, or problems in your relationships, or just not being able to get out of bed, that's okay. Accept the mess, because now you're stepping into a wise mind. So the first thing is to say, that's okay, because this is not who I am. I'm not a broken individual. I'm having an experience because of. Do you understand the difference? Identity helps us do that. But a shattered identity says, oh gosh, this is hopeless. I don't know how to even get out of this. People that are in extreme states of depression, that get stuck with, they can hardly get out of bed, where they just, like, it's scary just to be alive, and they don't want to live, and they have lots of suicidal ideation and so on. They feel hopeless. They feel like, this is, how on earth do you, this is so big, I can't deal with this. I don't know what this is. But if you tell that person, which is what I did in my work over these years, and I've trained so many people, I've trained physicians, I've trained all kinds of people around the world in this, to the point where I used to work mainly in the medical community. Now I'm trying to reach the world, because you don't have to have a medical degree to need this. Your qualification is being human. Okay, so I try to simplify this thing and create systems and processes to take this very complex stuff and make it accessible. So all this fancy stuff I'm telling you, I have made simplified it down into things that you can do and tools that you can apply that are doing all the brain stuff and that are making you, giving you the ability to cope. So someone who's in that depressed state, whose identity is shot, is going to be someone who you want to support them to the point, you can't fix them, but you can support them to the point where they can recognize, okay, this is not who I am. And that's why I always started with identity. Okay, so now, taking this a little deeper, a couple of quotes. Ralph Waldo Emerson, a poet: insist on yourself, never imitate. I mean, this is beautiful. We need to insist on being ourselves. With a world that loves to tell us who we are, we need to insist on being ourselves. Erwin Schrödinger is a physicist, quantum physicist, and this is a bit of a complicated quote, but it's brilliant. The task is not so much to see what no one has yet seen, but to think what nobody has yet thought about that which everybody sees. So if you read that again, it's a bit of a tongue twister. What he's saying is that the whole thing is you're not just trying to see the unseen, you're actually trying to see how you see it differently. Because you look at life differently, and that is beautiful. That's what we want to hone in on. That leads to creativity. How do you think the inventions of the world, the cell phone, technology, computers, tablecloths, clothes, buildings, these have all come from people in their identity, tapping into their wisdom, creating these thought patterns, generating these ideas, and once you've got a thought built, it then produces your words and your actions. So everything around you is a product of your unique identity. So it has to become a starting point. What is the subjective conscious experience? Why do we as individual humans perceive reality in such different ways? How do we all have the same colors of life but paint such different pictures? Okay. We get something called a quail, which is something that a scientist described as a conscious, subjective, and personal experience in reaction to incoming sensory experience. So in English, I've just explained that to you. You're all listening to me, and you're all growing what I'm saying into the root system, but your interpretation of is your unique way that you think, feel, and choose. That's your identity. It produces an angle that I don't have. The thought that you've just built right now, that you're building right now in here, and the branches that you've just grown as a result of what I've said, no one has ever built them before. So if you share them, if we had a chance to share this, we would be amazed at the insights that each of us bring to the table, just from me throwing this out there. That's identity. That's the beautiful stuff that we need to draw on to grow humanity, to grow this world. This is what we want to build into our kids from young. In South Africa and in this country, I've done work in school systems helping to build this in. I've proposed, and I did a podcast recently on this, and I did this in certain schools, but obviously, it hasn't been needed everywhere. We need to teach our kids wisdom. We need to have lessons, not just mathematics and science. We need to have lessons on wisdom, emotional management. What is your mind? How to do this? We need to be teaching our kids identity. This should be fixed parts of the curriculum. We need parent education. We need to be training the physician. I train physicians. I train all kinds of people in this field just to understand mind, because your mind is the driving force. And the unique way that your mind works is your identity. And if when you're dead, there's no mind. So it's so important, because This is what's keeping you alive. Okay, you getting this? Your mind is what is who you are, and your unique mind is your identity. Mind is how you think, feel, choose. So your unique individual responses are inspired and driven by your unique designer blueprint, your perfect you, okay? It does, our thinking does something to us. It's an experience exclusive to us. This is how I think, this is how I feel, this is how I choose, and that's beautiful. We've got to honor that in everyone. We've got to listen to each other. We've got to see it, and if we see someone showing up toxic, don't think, oh, they're a behavior problem, oh, they're this, oh, they're so irritating, or say it, own the mess, and own, don't deny that. Do it in this way. Oh my gosh, this is really irritating behavior. They are frustrating the whatever out of me. I can't stand it. It's burning me out. I'm a shock absorber. I can't do this anymore. Good. Get it out. If you don't get it out, it's going to go in. But follow with this. It's okay to be messy like that. Follow with this. But that's not who they are. They are showing up like that because of X, Y, and Z. I don't know what the X, Y, and Z is. I don't know what your relationship is. Maybe it's your child. Maybe you need to get a therapist in to help you to work something out or whatever. Or you need to just get your mind made, whatever. So in other words, a person is showing up in a certain way, not because they are like that. It's because something's happened to them. I tell you, this will free you up so much. When people are really driving you crazy, or you're really worried about someone, or you think they just like there's no hope, there is always hope, because that's not who they are. However someone is showing up is because of what's happened to them. And it doesn't mean you have to be their shock absorber or people pleasing to keep the peace. You need your boundaries. I'm all about that. You've got to put up you've got to put up boundaries to protect yourself, not to keep people out, but to protect yourself. Because if you don't protect yourself, your brain's going to be dysregulated, because your mind tells your brain what to do. Your mind's a mess, your brain's a mess, and so is your body. So you don't put up a boundary to keep people out. You put up a boundary to protect yourself so that your empathy increases. Because coming along with a boundary that protects myself keeps me in my identity, keeps me in wisdom, and enables me to say, okay, this far, no further. Let's end this discussion. In other words, you make wise choices. You become a responder as opposed to a reactor. Okay? So let me now show this with some imagery. We've had a lot of signs, a lot of words. Let me show you an imagery. This is now, where is this thing? Can you see it? Okay, there we go. Okay, so this is a famous surfer. I've forgotten his name. Mac, what was his name again? Sean something. Okay, and he was on a way. This is a real photograph. He had his GoPro with him, and he was making a decision about if he should ride this wave or if he should wait. So this is what we would call in science, in quantum physics, which is a phenomenal way of understanding mind and all the stuff I'm talking about. He is now in what we would call superposition. He's sitting on his surfboard, and he is using his wise mind. He's drawing on his ability to think, feel, and choose in his unique way, which is enabling him to have the insight to dig into his past experiences and pull up all of his experience about surfing. Okay? Because if he makes the wrong decision, he's not going to win the competition, or something could happen. Okay? So that's what we do every day. Every moment of every day, we have about 8,000 to 10,000 experiences in a day. If you're not operating your wise mind, it's a mess. Okay? And it's confusing. And each of those events is influenced by all the existing thought trees moving up from your non-conscious mind into your conscious mind, like I told you, through the subconscious. So as you think of one thing, it prompts a bunch of other stuff. So there's 20, 30, 40,000 things going on in your head in any one day. It's easy to get it messy, but you're brilliant, so you don't completely fall apart. But if you don't have a system in place where you're proactively managing, which starts with your identity, so I teach identity and mind management. Today we're just talking about the identity portion, okay? You're going to have a very messy mind. So if you don't make good decisions, your life could become very messy. So let's have a look at what actually happened on this day to hammer this point home. Okay, so I'm going to show you this little video now. Okay, sorry, there's not a video. This is an actual slide of inside the brain. You'll see that this is what these little thought trees look like as a whole. Looks like a big mess. But this is what these trees, I've pulled out individual trees, but you're looking inside the brain. If you make a healthy choice, you build a healthy response. So look at the top corner over there. That is, there's the vibrations and the protein folding, etc. is healthy there. It's not creating any disruptive oxygen, blood flow, or frequency changes in the brain that are affecting the functioning. So if you make a good choice, you have a healthy cell. I'm going to jump through to the back here. But if you make a wrong choice, Now look at the circle. There's something in the wave. Okay? This is what was in the wave. So if Sean, I think it's Sean, made the wrong decision, you land up making a big mess. In this case, it would be a rather disastrous big mess. But it's a really great analogy for you to think of. Not every single bad decision or choice or... Well, let me get away from the word bad decision because it's judgmental. Let's get back to we don't make the right... We get messy. We don't always choose correctly. We react instead of responding. We get irritated because we're frustrated. We get worked up because we didn't plan something. Whatever. Okay, that's the jaws, the shock. Some of it's really extreme where over time it can accumulate and you end up, you know, violence, etc., etc., to the not so extreme where you just maybe get irritated. But either way, that reaction, that thinking, feeling and choosing that led to the choice, the action of surfing, landed you up surfing or landed you up in the jaws of something you don't want to be in the jaws of. And so it's an analogy. I think you get my point. And in the brain, we took some autistic license there to make it easier to see, but there's an actual change in the structural components when we have toxic thoughts. And we see this, for example, like we have all these different energy frequencies in the brain that you can look at, delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma, high beta, high gamma. And they've got to flow like waves in the sea, from the big swells to the smaller swells to the waves that build up and then the whites on the top and they break on the beach and make little waves. You want that flow constantly happening. And it can get messy, but then it gets restored. And so someone who's in the identity is getting that wave pattern. And that'll look like the first one that didn't have the black. But if you are staying in a mess, if you're out of your identity, if you're not managing your mind, if you're not doing that, those wave patterns become like a tsunami. And so your anxiety levels can increase, or you can go flatline, where your oxygen levels, blood levels, frequencies change. And instead of having a balance of all of them, you get too much of, you get it like literally a flat line across all of the frequencies. In other words, what I'm saying to you is that we can see, not that the brain technology can't read your thoughts. None of it can, okay? All it does is showing us a response. All that fMRIs and MRIs and QEGs and all these incredible things, they're showing us the brain responding. And they change in an instant. As you are managing, as you get worse, they get worse. As you maybe manage something, you capture it, you get back in your identity and you manage it, your brain will change back. So it's constantly changing, which is beautiful. So it doesn't mean if you've had a scan of your brain, like a SPECT scan, which is kind of old technology, but it doesn't mean that, okay, that's who you are. That's just a representation of what's happening in the moment to show you that yes, your mind does affect your brain. So it's hardcore evidence, okay? And at the same time, if you've got that kind of thing going on in your brain, I can tell you your cortisol levels are through the roof, your DHEA is dropped, your homocysteine is dropped, your telomeres are freaking out, and so on, okay? So but you can change that again. So if I jump just over to here, I'm going to show you another little slide over here. Why is it not doing it? Okay, there we go. So, in other words, there is an effect of toxic stress. If we don't manage our mind, and when I talk about effects of toxic stress, managing your mind, I'm talking about stepping out of our identity, okay? So, with the we don't need all this. Okay, so here's another slide that just shows, this is showing you, it's an amazing slide. It's showing you neurons in a Petri dish, but it represents what's actually happening right now, but slowed down dramatically. This whole thing of my words becoming trees in your brain, that's what it looks like. So if you were dead, there wouldn't be any movement. That movement is growth. That is you with your unique mind building your experience into your brain. There's a physical end result. And those are these thoughts, and those thoughts then produce your words and your actions. With identity under control, you are building these. Or if you build these, you're quickly fixing them and converting them. And giving yourself, in this process, giving yourself the permission to be able to do that. It's so important. It's okay to be a mess. If you're a human, you're a mess. Every person in this room is a mental mess, okay? Let's just own it, and then let's repair it, and let's grow. That's what I'm saying. So this whole thing, the wellness industry, even the religious community, that you've got to be perfect, or you've got to, don't say those negative things, or, you know, that's my goal, to be, you know, totally at peace or totally never depressed again. Those are unrealistic. It's part of your humanity. It's beautiful to look at depression as a messenger. to tell you, okay, there's something going on. You own it. You get agency. One of the things I showed in my research in my most recent book, Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess, I put slides and all that kind of thing, images of this. I showed that when people are empowered and recognize they have agency, so one of the critical things when I work with patients is that you will feel 81% more in control of your life. As soon as you get people feeling empowered, that, hey, yes, my life's such a mess, but you know what? I've got this brilliant brain. That's not who I am. Underneath this is this incredible ability that I have to drive my mind, to drive my brain. So me with my mind, drive my mind. The messy mind drives the wise mind drives the messy mind. Think of a little helicopter. Think of it being a time capsule. At any one moment, you're never just in the present. You're in the present, past, and future. You, right now, as you're listening to me, you are operating in time travel. In your helicopter. You are the pilot, the messy mind, because the pilot's flying all over, and the co-pilot's guiding you, but you don't always listen to the co-pilot. So we've got to train ourselves to listen to the co-pilot. When we're in our identity, the pilot talks to the, listens to the co-pilot and asks questions and says, oh, that wasn't a good idea, what should I do? And in doing that, in this very moment, as you're listening to me, you are time traveling in that helicopter. You are on that wave. All these analogies I'm giving you, what does it mean? I'm telling you stuff now, but what I'm telling you now, how are you understanding it? By the thoughts you already have popping up into your mind that I spoke about earlier on. So everything that I'm saying is stimulating thoughts to pop up into your mind. And those are the past. And as I'm telling you this, you're thinking, okay, how can I apply this in my life, in my kids' lives, in my work? So you're thinking of the future. So in any one moment, you are operating in the present, past, and future. And you direct that process. If you are self-regulating, and self-regulating is the ability that we have from neuroscience, we see that we are able to self-regulate every 10 seconds. Wow. Maybe you didn't know that. I'm not asking you to look at your watch every 10 seconds. I'm asking you to have developed the awareness that you actually can do, can stand back and observe your thinking, feeling, and choosing. How? Well, how are you functioning right now? Just look at yourself sitting in the chair. What are you doing? What are your hands doing? What are you thinking? What thoughts are going through your head right now? As you go from this lecture and you have a conversation, look at, watch yourself as you formulate the words. What are your facial expression? How are you saying it? What's the impact on the people that you're speaking to? Watch yourself during the course of today. That exercise, I challenge you to do this. That is developing this ability to stand back and observe your own unique identity. And you can then start seeing, oh gosh, I really reacted wrong. That's not my identity, because identity is related to love. If I'm operating in my identity, I'm going to release wisdom. It might be a firm boundary, but it's not going to, and they may not like it, but that's not, you know, you've done what you needed for you. See what I'm saying? Or when you said something, it's boosted someone, it's built them up. So identity produces creativity, it produces love, it produces honesty, it produces a sense of peace, a sense of excitement, all the way, all these different things, okay? So mind is therefore 99% of who you are, and brain and body are 1%. So your mind is driving your brain and your body. So your identity is wired into the core of your identity. It's wired inside there. As one neuroscientist says, his name is, I've got it over here, Peter Sterling, he describes, and I'm going to read it to you, it's in a blog I just did recently, each individual has their own unique specialized areas in the brain, which is the basis of their unique identity. I discovered this as well. He's known for his 200 areas, but I looked at the 7 different pillars of thought. So what I have done to help you find your identity, let me give you some tools now. Okay, what can you do? Okay, before I give you the tools, I'm going to show you two or three slides, and then I'm going to show you some tools and how to use this book and how you can start finding your identity. Okay, so the first slide you see up there is actually in my latest book, Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess. These are using QEG. These are called head maps, using the concept of using the brain technology of called a QEEG, and we're looking at the different frequencies. So what you'll see there at the top is alpha, beta, delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma, etc. Gamma's not on here. And then you'll see day 1, 2163. So this is a clinical trial that I did, a random controlled double-blind study that I did to look at if people understand how to manage their minds, can they change their life? Okay, so there's a lot of stuff that I don't have time to share with you from this. I just want to talk about the identity portion on this slide. If you have a look at the very first row, this is in day 1. This particular subject, and this case studies in the book, this particular subject had tried everything. They had all the diagnoses, they'd done every therapy you can think of, just about. They had multiple different medications. Nothing had worked. They were suicidal. They were convinced to enter this trial. And they were really like, this is the last thing, and I'm checking out. So it was a really critical point for this person. That's why I'm using this particular case study. And when we looked at that person's brain, that there was a lot of dark blue. That means flatline. They were so depressed. They were not sleeping. They were not functioning, non-functional. But one of the biggest things was their identity was very suppressed. Now, when someone's operating in their perfect you, when someone's confident in managing their identity, even with the knocks, we all get knocks to identity. But then we can regroup quite quickly. What we see there is a lot of blue at the front of the brain. If you look at the second, before we look at that row, this person, we looked at blood, we looked at DNA, we looked at telomeres, we looked at psychological things, we looked at the most important, we looked at their story. Who are you? What has happened to you? Why do you feel this way? That is the most important thing. We can do all these biomarkers, all these fancy measures, which are telling us the evidence of something going on. But at the end of the day, it's your story that we have to listen to. And her story, and I'm not telling you her whole story, but what she said that's very significant to identity is, she said, I am depression. That was her identity. And everything around her narrative was all the things she couldn't do. And now her life was so helpless. Okay? And then when we applied, then this person got the mind management, the treatment, which is the mind management system I've developed called the NeuroCycle. I have an app called the NeuroCycle, and I teach it in this book as well. And it's the mind management process. We gave her that. She went through that over 21 days, so daily in an app. It wasn't therapy. This person went through that on their own, and I'm stressing on their own. So I developed an app. I've taken my techniques, put them into books, put them into an app, and it's literally like me giving you therapy. The point here is that this person was working with themselves by themselves. We have so much power. I'm trying to empower people to recognize the power in themselves. When this person came back into the clinic at day 21, this person's brain had gone gray. And what that means, it's very artificial, these colors and so on, but essentially what that tells us is that we've got a more balanced brainwave pattern across the left and the right brain hemisphere. We're seeing all the different types of waves that I described earlier on, from the big ones to the crests on baking on the beach and the little wave, etc. In other words, that's what we want to see. That's someone who's actually owning their stuff and managing their stuff. This subject's narrative at day 21 was, I am not depression. It had shifted from being I am depressed to I am not depression. I am depressed because of. This person, you'll see blue at the front of the brain there, like a greeny blue color. That shows that the frontal lobe activity, as they're conscious, their identity is improving. So it's very linked. The frontal lobe, the way that it fires up when you actually are managing your mess, when you're in this wise mind, messy mind thing, it fires up. Whereas in the beginning there was flatline, now there is action, and it just developed over. By day 63, this person's identity was back. This person actually said in that middle row, in that first 3 weeks, they said, I'm not depressed. I'm depressed because of, but I'm actually even more depressed and more anxious, but it's different. I'm anxious and depressed because now I know why I was flatline and depressed and couldn't function. I know, and there was a whole history of abuse that this person had suppressed and had come up. So the sadness, the increased depression that was different was the sadness around what had happened. Can you hear the difference? So there's now, things get worse before they get better, but the difference is this person's not hopeless anymore. There's a reason for why they are like they are. And so the treatment continued. By day 63, which is significant, this person was saying, okay, I can deal with, I understand depression and anxiety are emotional responses, warning signals of things going on in my life, and there's a lot of work that I have to do. And that's just a quick summary. Why 63 days? The research I've shown is that when you use your identity properly and you drive through all these different things that are going on in your life, you can't fix it in one day. You can't fix it in 21 days. It's a myth that habits form in 21 days. You have to have a habit form before you can change your behavior. So you can know something, but if you don't change the habits, if you don't turn that change what you know you should be doing into a habit, you won't change your behavior. You will probably revert. So this is one of the big dangers of therapy, intervention, and people just managing their minds, is people give up too soon. It doesn't take 21 days to form a habit. It takes 63. And cycles of 63. So this particular subject would do multiple cycles. Depending on the level and severity of trauma, you would do multiple cycles. What is driving this ability to do these cycles, to manage your mind, to see your identity? Okay, so how can you find your identity? So identity is a massive thing. And in this book, The Perfect You, with there's the whole pack at the back there, I have put the first part of the profile. So it's a great place to start. So when I was working in my practice and my patients came, I said that the first thing I would do would be identity. I was trained to diagnose and tell them what was wrong with them and fix that. That made them even more depressed. If you tell them, this is, you know, I've come here with problems, here's more problems. So what I did was I thought, I can't do this. I need a way of helping a person understand how they uniquely think and feel and choose. So I started doing a ton of research to try and work out how to do it. So I'll show you, there is a image over here which is of my theory, wherever it is. I've got so many slides that I was going to show you. Mac, can you come? Oh, there we go. Okay, here. So I developed a theory years ago, which I've spent the rest of my career developing, testing, researching, and you don't have to understand any of that. It's just the graphic of my theory of mind, brain, body, interaction, and identity, and intelligence, all the stuff I've been saying, okay? So from there, I then developed trials and research studies. End of this thing is that I wanted out of this to have a way of a person coming to me who's broken and not telling them that they're more broken or how broken they are, rather starting off with, let's talk about who you really are. Then they'll deal with the stuff that you've become, but let's start with your core. So I looked at what I discovered from my research, and this is like, it's in the book and it's described there, and this is just the basic principles, is that your brain, in addition to the two halves and the four lobes and the different structures and the 200 specializations, we can overarch this with a concept of, we've got seven different metacognitive modules. So what that means is that we can divide the entire brain up into these seven different areas. And the thinking behind this, it's not those colors are irrelevant, it's just to show you these seven different areas. The thinking behind this is that while you're sitting here listening to me now, all the mind stuff I've described is moving through those modules in your unique way. So I keep telling you that the unique way that you think, feel, and choose is unique to you. So your brain is designed to match your mind. So the way you use those seven is different to the person sitting next to you. And because there's an infinite number of people that are going to ever be alive, and if you add on the billions that we've got now, 8 billion or whatever, and how many billion there were, no one's ever used that the same way. So your brain is uniquely designed to suit you. We even see down to your proteins vibrate differently, because your proteins vibrate differently to your proteins because of your unique structure. So to try and make this digestible, I took those, this is like lots, all the stuff I've been saying, and unpacked it into these seven different areas. I took very common psychological labels that we're familiar with. You can see there the labels that I've used in intrapersonal, interpersonal. These are words that you can relate to. This is not a test. This is an organic flow of how you organically think, feel, and choose. Now, there's two parts to this profile. In this book is one part, because it was too much to put everything in one book. I have another book called The Gift in You. It's called Think, Learn, Succeed. Think, Learn, Succeed. We have got the other part of the profile. And you can always get that if you want to. But this is enough to activate what I've told you today, this profile in this book with The Perfect You, based on the same principles. So it's one part of a seven-hour-long profile that I used to do with my patients over 7 hours. Okay, so I've reduced it down broke it up into two parts, and in this book there is the UQ, the Unique Qualitative Assessment Tool. You can do it yourself. It's not difficult at all. There's a lot of, there's a whole explanation of how to do it, and there's the video and workbook, and we sent you some links as well to see descriptions, etc., etc. But essentially, it is I set up a questionnaire that there's no wrong answer. And each question, the questions are clustered around these seven different areas. So there's seven different parts to the questionnaire. So when you go through the book, you'll see that there's seven different sections in the profile. So if you've got the book, I'm not sure what page, here we go. It's on page, if you If you have the book, it starts on page 115, and there are different questions in different areas. And there's little lines to write underneath, and you definitely won't fit it all in there. You need to get a notebook or something to write in. And what you essentially do is you literally answer those questions. As you answer those questions and you work through, there's no scoring. The insight comes from how you're actually answering those questions. So they're very organic and very uniquely designed for you to give your own answer. So it's a self-exploration tool where, and at the end of each set of questions, you can make a little summary. And when you work through the whole profile, there's also no time limit. You can take as long as you want. You can do this over one day, one week, one month, 1 year. I wouldn't recommend that long because you'll get more insight if you can do it sooner. But and then you can redo it. My recommendation that I always give people is take about, you know, 6-7 weeks to do it. Do one section per week, which is manageable considering our busy lives. Or even take 2 weeks, and then go sequentially, work through them. Rather, don't rush it, and pay attention and really dive deep. The instructions are very clear. As you finish one section, so it's seven different sections, each relating to the different areas, the different metacognitive modules. There's a little summary section, and you can kind of sum up what insights you've gained. At the end of the whole profile, if you look back at your summaries, you'll get a very good insight into how you are thinking, feeling, and choosing about things in life. It stimulates a tremendous look inside yourself at your levels of wisdom that you have, and it familiarizes you. The GIFT profile, which is in the book Think, Learn, Succeed, it's measurement orientated, and it works hand in hand with this profile, and it gives you what I call your customized thinking. So that's something you can do later. I would start here. This is where I started with my patients, okay? This is a fantastic place to start. It's going to develop your ability to self-regulate every 10 seconds. It's going to develop your ability to recognize, I am not depression. I am depressed because of. And it's going to train you to actually constantly develop your intelligence and your wisdom. So in summary, the unique qualitative assessment tool is organic and developmental, and it covers a lifespan. I recommend that you do maybe once a year that you do a full-on identity check. And the more you do these, the more you'll be able to do quick identity checks. The more you'll be able to tune into the signals, oopsie, I'm being shaped by someone else's thing, what someone else thinks I should be doing. Okay, it will begin to give you a feel for your perfect you nature. Oopsie, sorry. It's not an IQ. I want to stress it's not an IQ. An IQ has, the whole IQ movement has been shown to be very unscientific. You can't be measured. You can't be categorized. You are your own unique category. Okay, very important. So this is helping you find that category. It's fantastic to do with your kids. You could do this as a family activity. We did this and trained all the teachers in schools where I worked to use this, and when I did family therapy. It's not a personality test, okay? You're not a category. So you're not a number, you're not a category. You are uniquely thinking, feeling, and choosing in your own unique way. It's not an EQ, so it's not an emotional quotient. All of those are incorporated into it. So we've got this desire to put people in a box. You're this personality type, you're that number, you're that on the EQ scale. Dump all of that. You are brilliant, organic, and changing. And only through exploration are you going to really get to know what's at your core. Okay, this pulls it out of you. The latter are reductionistic and based on classical. You don't need all that. Okay, so let's go to the next thing. There's seven different types, therefore seven sections to the UQ. Thinking, feeling, and choosing is the result of how these modules interact and are used. So how you use those seven different areas. When I said to you that you think, feel, and choose in your own unique way, what we're doing is we're using to find what that looks like. It's based on that theory where you saw the brain with the different colors, and the questionnaire is how you can understand how you think, feel, and choose uniquely. So that's essentially what it is. So as you do that, the benefits are, I've got thousands more slides, but the benefits are numerous. The biggest benefit you're immediately going to get is the recognition that I really am brilliant, that there's evidence, there's science, that the core of who I am is this person who thinks, feels, and chooses in this incredibly unique way. And therefore, it's okay to be messy, because I can use my identity to own the mess and to repair the mess and to grow. That's really when you start thinking like that, you know your identity is firing up. When you're doing that, you are in your perfect you. You're stepping into identity. You can see this takes a long time to teach. There's a lot more. I have certification courses and coaching courses, and I'm working with Howard to develop something that's nice and simple that Howard will let you know about if you're interested. Thank you.
I think what you heard from Dr. Lee is that you are phenomenal. I think that's what I heard. Yes, my favorite word, for sure.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. And I believe that you just heard from a legitimate phenomenologist. What do you think? Brilliant. Maybe a little too brilliant, if that's a, I don't think that's a term, but so you're going to want to get the kit at the back of the room. It has the profile, it has all the questions, the book, the DVD, and I think there's three things in that, so those are available at the table. But we might want to do a couple questions. I know you guys have to catch a flight, but I want to give the audience a couple minutes to ask a few questions. This is a lot, right? Okay, so maybe the first question I'll ask you is, how do we break this down on a day-by-day basis and make sense out of it in our real world? What are some of the practical things that I can do every day?
Might help if I have some amplification here. The first thing is to recognize you can't change what's happened to you, but you can change what's in you. So get that as a mindset. So think about that. Write that down somewhere and think about that. Secondly, that how you show up is not who you are. It's what's happened to you. And that's messiness, and you've got to be okay with that. So it's okay to be messy. Give yourself permission. Then give yourself permission to now manage that mental mess. So those are three kinds of statements that you can maybe write down somewhere and look at daily. To apply, then to move into mind management, I don't have time to teach you that now, but I do have an app called the NeuroCycle app, which you can download and you can use immediately, and I walk you through in 15 minutes. You can use it in 5 minutes. I walk you through this process over 63 days of how to actually, it's a 5-step process to help you to practically be okay with the mess and manage the mess. So that's one practical sort of, that's three statements, and then get into the app. The third thing is get this kit and do the profile. Do the profile. Give yourself a week to 2 weeks, and you know, scan. Even if you maybe just listen, thanks Howard, to the video, whatever. Maybe get in a group or something and study. Take a 7 weeks, because it's a seven. I think it's 7 week. Chapter, so each chapter in the workbook matches the DVD, and re-listen to all of the stuff. Okay, and maybe do it as a group, maybe you can do it virtually, you could get some groups together because you've all heard this together, or however. And then you can literally rehear everything step by step, sequentially, the video and the workbook, follow the chapters of the book, and break down everything I've tried to squish into an hour and a half, which I've tried to give you the philosophical overview and deep understanding, sort of insight. It breaks it down into do this, do this, do this. And then once you understand that, start doing the profile. And as I said, give yourself time. There's no rush on this. Because we've started the process today by you understanding you can't change what's happened to you, but you can change what's in you, that you're phenomenal and amazing, and how you show up is because of what's happened to you, and that's okay, you can clean it up. That is the most important concept I've taught you today. The NeuroCycle will give you the tool to do that, and this will give you the tool to develop your wisdom. This book is developing your wisdom. Your identity, the unique way you think, feel, and choose, is your wisdom. So take your time. I mean, it is a phenomenal experience that you don't want to rush. So just 7 modules, 7 parts to the questionnaire, around about 25 questions per module. I mean, you might find you spend 2 hours on one question. That's okay. Just take the time, put it next to your bed, find some time, and work through it as slowly as you can. And I mean, at your time frame. And once you've done that, send me an email, because I know that you will be completely revolutionized by the application. This is life-changing stuff. And then from there, there's more things that you can do. But this is enough to start.
Perfect. Yes, Elise. Yeah, here, I'll help you. Actually, why don't we do this? I'll stand next to you. Okay. Dr. Leaf can keep that microphone. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, can you hear me? All right.
Yes.
So when you have one of those trees that are not the good trees that grow, do they eventually like go away, or do the other trees just grow around it and kind of suppress it, or how does that work?
Beautiful question.
Great.
Okay, so the physics principle operating here is that energy is never lost. Energy is always transferred. So what we see neuroscientifically is that when you have awareness, as soon as you're aware of something, so as soon as you realize, okay, I'm depressed because of, this starts coming up. You don't know the details yet, but that awareness is, that depression is linked to this, because the depression, I'm just using that as an example, is a signal that's coming out of here. So you're flying over in your helicopter and there's this dark cluster of trees and you see the smoke signal, and for years you keep flying and averting, and you just keep, you know, whatever you keep seeing and it comes in your conscious mind and you don't deal with it, you shove it back down, it's getting stronger. Eventually one day you realize, I have to listen. So you tune into the signal, and the signal is the depression calls you in, and maybe the behavior symptoms of, you know, you're not getting out of bed, and maybe the physical lot of GI issues, and then maybe there's another, your perspective is life sucks, I want out of here. That's extreme, okay? But those signals call you in. You land your plane, you get out of your plane, you and your wise mind, and you stand back. And you're looking at this thing, and you're going to start now changing it. As soon as you're aware, as soon as you've done what I've just described, this thing, the protein branches, which were very strong before, have become weakened. This is an incredible insight and finding in neuroscience, that when you are aware, these toxic patterns become weakened and malleable so that you can change them. Something that's weak, it's like an old, think of a plant after winter that has died and all the branches are so like crumbly and dry that you just touch them and they're falling apart. That's what this is becoming. Okay, it gets into that very, very vulnerable state. This is part of neuroplasticity. So as you now start the process of working through the neurocycle over five steps, which is five steps daily, this is getting weaker, more and more branches are coming off as you deconstruct and reconstruct. So eventually this is gone, because I've taken all the energy from that. Those proteins have basically gone away. There's a whole scientific process happening there, and that energy has been transferred, and as you've been breaking that down slowly, you've been building this slowly. So there's a process over 21 days where you are transitioning between this big ugly thing that was strong, it's now weak, and as that breaks off, you're building a replacement. So this is a little shoot, that's a big tree, this gets small, that gets big. So there's a transference. So you reconceptualize. In the midst of this, I can still talk about what happened to me, but now no longer does it own me. I may still cry, be sad, which is totally normal, but this is now inside here, and it's now been reconceptualized. So you embrace process and reconceptualize. You deconstruct and reconstruct. To do that, you need to have confidence in your identity. And that's why I say start here, because wow, it's actually your identity, which is the unique way that you think, feel, and choose, that you are drawing on to use that, to do that. So think of your identity as the wise pilot, the co-pilot talking to the pilot that's flying. Does that make sense? Okay.
Perfect.
Trying to shove in like complex science into simple answers.
Love it. Okay. Okay. We have time for one more question, because I think we're going to have to break, right? One more question. Yes.
So if you have fallen and you have head trauma, are starting dementia, how do we use this information to deal with those situations?
Excellent question. Okay, I've done a lot of work in this area. I've worked with dementia and Alzheimer's. I started my work with TBI, traumatic brain injury, and the beautiful part is that your brain is neuroplastic, which I've been saying. So we saw with us, with my brain, my TBI patients, we saw a 35 to 75% improvement in functioning, cognitive, social, emotional, intellectual, which is phenomenal, with very deliberate and intentional mind management. So I would put my patients that were traumatically brain injured through a very intensive 63-day cycles where they were using the five steps in a very therapeutic way. But now what we've done is I'm adapting that and putting those elements into our app. And in the meantime, my NeuroCycle app has these steps that drive neuroplasticity. So to answer your question, you can do it. You can change your brain. The way you change your mind drives your brain. So I've seen people that were written off as vegetables getting degrees, and not just once. People that were completely like non-functional, even nearly 10 years post-trauma, stuck in a certain point, which is very common unless you stimulate your mind. You stimulate your mind to stimulate your brain. Going from not even being able to function on a 10th grade to becoming one of the top criminologists in South Africa with multiple degrees. So this is not just once. I can give you thousands and thousands of examples of people I've worked with and people that have not even heard of, that met me but have worked with the book. So I'm saying that not to say that it's me. It's not. It's the system that I've developed that when you drive your mind, you change your brain. So when it comes to things like Alzheimer's and dementias, obviously the earlier we catch it, the better. And there are, you can be proactive with things like Alzheimer's and dementias right from zero, age zero. The way you are managing your mind is one of the major factors for Alzheimer's and dementias, because years and years and years of undealt with stuff weakens the brain. This ages the brain. This increases, it's not just the, it's the newest research on Alzheimer's and dementia show it's not the accumulation of tau and protein, the accumulation of the different protein types of proteins, the amyloid beta and so on. It is actually because people that have been lived 100 to 101, 110 have got those deposits in their brain. What is more important is how the brain is actually functioning, because of how your mind is functioning. So in other words, this is very complex stuff. Is when you drive your mind correctly, you build resilience into your brain that is a very proactive stance. So everything that I'm teaching you in terms of managing your mind, finding your identity, are countering the damage we do when we are staying in toxic stress and we're losing our identity, we've been knocked around by the world. When you're operating in your identity, you will make the attempt to clean up the mess. You'll make the attempt to eat a healthier diet, to do the exercise. When you're feeling in a bad place, you aren't. So all those things like sleep, et cetera, you're not going to do unless your mind is right. You're not going to eat the healthy diet. You're not going to manage the stress. So the answer is, when you manage your mind in all these aspects through identity as a sort of starting point, you then can grow health into your brain and change the patterns in the brain, change the actual structure of your brain.
Wow. Give it up for Dr. Lee. Okay.